way through chapter 16. It's about 6 months before his crucifixion. So he's probably feeling the pressure now, more than ever, to get as much information to these apostles as possible. They were going to have to learn fast. And so the lesson today is in how Jesus trained them. And specifically, how did he train and prepare them for his death? There's a difference in how you train, like, a new hire, someone that you intend to work with going forward, versus how you train a replacement, somebody who's going to be doing it all. There's going to be no on-the-job training later, no shortcuts. All right, so that's how we got to where we are. All right, now let's get into this map here. The words are really small on here, but hopefully you can see some of it. I can't see it at all on the back. We see Capernaum in the middle. Yeah, there we go. Capernaum right here in the middle, which was his base of operations. But the longer he was there, the more pressure he was getting from the crowds. The Pharisees were coming up from Jerusalem to bother him. He needed to get away from it for a period. So he goes up to the region of Tyre and Sidon up here, this Phoenician area. And that's where he healed the Phoenician woman. He comes down to the region of Cana and Sepphoris down here. He heals down there. He feeds the 4,000 around here on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and then sails across to the west, over on this side. Of course, the Pharisees are waiting there for him, so he responds to them, he teaches, and then he leaves and he heads up to the region of Caesarea Philippi up here. Probably not the city itself, which was a highly pagan area, but the area in general. And this is where he asked the question to Peter and the apostles, "Who do men say that I am?" That's where we left off a week ago today when we finished up the last lesson. And that good confession is made. But more teaching needs to be done, and that brings us up to now. Okay, so Paul, if you would start us off by reading 16, verse 21 to 23, and y'all look for the four predictions that are made while he reads.
"From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you.' But he turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men.'"
All right, good. Thank you. Let's list these predictions. They're shocking, right? What does he say is going to happen? Go to Jerusalem, suffer many things, be killed, be raised. These are some big statements, right? This would have been shocking. This is not the fate of the king that they expected. And this marks a big shift in Jesus' teaching. I believe that Peter crossed that threshold that Jesus was looking for in his previous teaching when he said, "You are the Son of God." Now that that belief has been established, Jesus shifts his focus from Galilee and the events that took place there to Jerusalem and the events that are going to take place there. And it's time to start teaching the really hard things. And that's what we're going to be going through. And Peter, he kind of reacts like you would expect. "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you." Why do you think Jesus calls him Satan for this reaction? Why does he call him that? Worldly person? It was a worldly idea. What does Satan mean? Do y'all know the word? Adversary, right? At this point, Peter's words were an adversary to Jesus. I think in the Greek it means a stumbling block. Go ahead. Right? Yeah, exactly. It was an extreme temptation for him. It was a stumbling block. He was an adversary to him at the point. One thought that I had in addition to all of that was, how many of you have ever felt that disappointment of expecting one reaction but getting another? You know, you're kind of looking for one thing, like, "What do you think about this thing that I worked really hard on?" They're like, "Eh, it's okay. You know, what do you think about this, whatever, new outfit? Oh, you look okay in it." Just anything like that. I feel like there may have been a little bit of that here, in that Jesus had been told by Peter that he believes he's the Christ, the Son of God. And he tells all the disciples something that no doubt was heavy on his mind, all right, that he was going to go and have to die for all of this. And I'm going to have to reveal to them that I'm going to die. I would want a reaction like, you know, "Jesus will be there for you. We're here to help. What do you need? What do you need from us? What teaching do we need?" But instead, he gets the equivalent of being kind of blown off. "Oh, that's not going to happen." And I think that was hard, but that's just kind of a side thought. Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. They're kind of making baby steps here, right? He's starting to realize, hey, you are the Son of God. but I'm not quite ready for some of that harder teaching yet of like what's actually going to happen. They're moving into that now. I think you're right. They didn't fully understand yet. Any other comments on that? Go ahead, Steve. No, I don't do that, Steve. No one here does that. You're exactly right. We all do that. Even things that we have seen from the beginning, even things that we have in the Bible, we still understand. We still have difficulty completely understanding the totality of it. Good. All right, good, Paul. I think you're right. Go ahead. I think you're absolutely right, because I think Peter was uniquely qualified to take this sort of rebuke. He had that willing heart, and even when you told him, like, you know, he rebukes him very hard, calls him Satan, that's something a lot of people would have withered away from and not been able to recover from, frankly. But Peter, that, I think, it touched him. It was something that he understood. I need to change. I need to fix my line of thinking. Very good. All right, let's keep moving. We're going to read 24 to 28. Paul, whenever you're ready.
Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone desires to come to me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father and his angels, with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works. Assuredly, I say to you, there are some standing here who shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom."
All right, good. I meant to tell y'all before we started reading to be thinking about what Jesus is teaching his apostles here. We're trying to learn the lessons along with them as we go. So maybe skim back over it. Now, what do you think they were learning from this? What's the idea, the summary idea here? Good. Right, absolutely. My Bible has the header, "Take up your cross and follow Jesus." That's a good summary. They're going to have to deny themselves. And, you know, what does that even mean? Like, how would you describe what it means to deny yourself to someone else? If somebody had to ask about that. Go ahead, Steve. Good. And that's what they were going to need to learn quick, because they were going to be doing a lot of serving coming up. He says, you need to put away what you think and follow what Jesus is telling them, because they're confused right now. Things are not quite what they imagined, and so they're a little confused. They need to lean on Jesus, and he has proven, "I am a trustworthy person to lean on right now." And so he's asking them at this point, put yourself aside, those things that you think, and follow me. All right, that's going to be extremely important. "I have risen people from the dead, walked on water, healed all sorts of sickness, told the wind to cease, cast out demons. You know, if I tell you to do these things, please follow, because I have proven myself." But how near was the kingdom? Verse 28. Yeah, it's within their lifetime. Good. Day of Pentecost. It's within their lifetime. It's soon. That's good to hear, right? It's going to come very soon. They kind of have a moment here. And we'll see that as Jesus dies and is resurrected, and even the events of Acts shortly. Go ahead, Mr. Sewell.
I think one of the things, and yet Jesus died. But he's saying, my death is, you're going to have to live your life, either by death or by living today. But you're going to have to life.
Right. Now, this was a hard teaching. And, you know, we kind of rail on the apostles a lot for how they didn't understand and all the mistakes they made. But they put a lot of faith. A lot of them did do this. They did put their trust in. It took them a little while. But that trust and that faith that they put in of understanding this different type of kingdom is what has led it all the way to here we are today, still learning and understanding and building on this kingdom that was established. Okay, let's move into chapter 17. Paul. Yeah, that's a very cool statement to hear that and to understand the type of kingdom that was coming. All right, Paul, let's read verse 17. This is 1 through 8. I'm sorry, chapter 17, verses 1 through 8. And again, think about what the disciples are going to learn from what he's teaching here.
"Now, after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, led them up on a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with him. Then Peter answered and said to Jesus, 'Lord, is it good for us to be here? If you wish, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah.' While he was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And suddenly a voice came out of the cloud, saying, 'This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased, hear him.' And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their faces and were greatly afraid. But Jesus came and touched them and said, 'Arise, do not be afraid.' When they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only.
All right, good. All right, we're going to get to what they learned here in just a second. But first, this is a picture of Mount Hermon. This is probably the mountain that Jesus took them up for the Transfiguration. They had been in that area, and it's the highest mountain there, which seems to match the description in verse 1 of them going up a high mountain. But who went up with Jesus? Peter, James, and John. We have this inner circle here, right? And James, he died a premature death. But the other two, Peter and John, they both mention this later in their own writing. 2 Peter 1 is where he mentions it, and then John 1, verse 14. They both go back to this specific incident. Okay, then Jesus is transfigured, and there with him is Moses and Elijah. But most importantly, what do you think Peter, James, and John learned from this? There must have been a purpose. So what did they learn? Right, he was the fulfillment. He is the Son of God. They learned that up there. What else do they learn? Yeah, hear him. They learn, here, pay attention to what he's saying. You've been doing it, but solidifies it. God himself is saying, hear him, listen to him. What does God say about him? Of who I am well pleased, which is a very good statement. It's a very strong statement because even John the Baptist was struggling a little bit with this. Well, is this the person I should be listening to? Is he the Messiah? And here is confirmation. What he is doing, I am pleased with. Listen to him. Move forward. This is going to be a strong pillar of faith for them moving forward. There's special significance of Moses and Elijah. Moses as a type of Jesus. We could do a whole other way of doing this class, circling around that idea. Elijah as his forerunner. This must have made such a deep impression on these three. Now, we didn't read 9 to 13, but they're talking about his upcoming death. So this shows and cements for these disciples, this is part of the plan. They needed to hear that. It's something that has to be done, and it's approved by God. I think this would have been an important step in the disciples' faith once he was gone and they were left to build this church, to have that rock-solid knowledge and confidence that this was ordained by God himself. Any comments on that? Okay, so what we're going to do for this next section, do I have this yet? Yeah, we're going to do a little group activity. And I was like, how in the world do I divide this spread out auditorium? So we're going to give this a try. If your last name starts with A to E, you see your passage 17, 14 to 21, and so on. Just find yourself on this chart. Read the passage, and I want y'all to just give a summary of like what happened here so that we're not stepping through this all as a full congregation. We're going to move through it a little quicker. Give a quick summary of what your passage is about, and then what they learned, okay? So I'm going to do this real quick. I'm trying to keep this instruction under a minute. If your last name is A to E, raise your hand real high. Do we have plenty of people? Okay, yes. F to J, there's plenty. K to O, there's enough. P to T, yes. And then the big one, U to Z. How many we got? Right, I got at least one. Okay, good. We're good. Yeah. All right, we have enough for all these. So y'all be ready to talk. I'm going to give y'all just a couple minutes to look through this yourselves. You can talk amongst the people around you if you want to, if they're in your group. But then we'll come together and we'll do these summaries. Through these sections a little at a time, y'all be bold. If somebody gives a summary and you want to add a comment to it, please do. We're going to go through this together, okay? So 17, 14 to 21, this is the A to E, folks. Give me a summary of this section and then what they learned. Who wants to be a spokesman for the A to E folks? Oh, we have a hand. Go ahead. Okay. Right. So that's what they learned, right? That they more faith. Their faith is weak. Anybody want to add anything to that? Good. Yeah, good. It's good to read multiple versions and get that sometimes. Good. Anything else? All right. So had the apostles already had the power to cast out demons? Yes, they did. Back in chapter 10 is when they got it. So they're feeling good about themselves, perhaps. They've been doing this for a little while. Why do they fail? Bill brought that out. Too much confidence in themselves, not the source of their power, Jesus. You know, Jesus said in verse 20, because of your little faith. And here is where he tells them the thing we mentioned in an earlier class. It's your lack of faith that's holding you back. If you had the faith of a little mustard seed, we had that little picture, right? A tiny little mustard seed that we talked about earlier. You could not just walk on water, you could move mountains. Nothing is impossible. Remember, when the same thing happened to the Israelites as they were overtaking nations in the promised land, and they were just mowing through these nations, no problem. And they started relying a little too much on themselves, and then they failed at Ai. And Joshua had to step in and show some leadership there and show them, like, hey, y'all are getting too much confidence in yourselves. They went back to God. They got back on track. Go ahead, Corey. Well, I think partially it says, and Jesus answered, O faithless and twisted generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him here to me. I think they were certainly part of the crowd along with anyone else who was there. Because they needed to hear, like, hey, y'all need to move past these things of weak faith and onto the stronger faith, which you're going to need coming up. All right. They learned they needed more faith. They needed to keep their focus on Jesus and what he was teaching. Paul, will you read us the last two verses of this section real quick, 22 and 23? Yeah, 17, 22, and 23.
Now, while they were staying in Galilee, Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And the third day he will be raised up. And they were exceedingly sorrowful.
All right, so this was the second announcement of his death. After the first one, Peter rebuked him. Now they're in Galilee. They're about to take a long journey to Jerusalem. That's the place he's going to die. And Jesus still needs to remind them again about what's going to happen. But what does it say the reaction was this time? Yeah, grieved. One translation says greatly distressed. No one wants to feel that way. But this was improvement on the last reaction. They're starting to get it. Remember, he's teaching the disciples. So the second time, they're making some progress here. Okay, yeah, I think we got through that. All right, let's get to our next group. I got to pull out my list here. F to J, 17, verse 24 to 27. Let's get a summary of this section. F to J leader emerge. If you want, yeah, go ahead.
That's my name.
Okay, yeah, fire away.
It's interesting. This is God. That Jesus is God. You know, why should God to his Father? But Jesus, he's baptized. He was born of sin. He goes in a marvelous miracle. He teaches Peter. One is sometimes to give up rights they have.
Right. There's a.
Peter thought he could answer.
Right. There's a lot packed into this, and you brought out a lot of it. Where do I start? So, Peter, like you mentioned, he understood that Jesus was the Son of God, but he hadn't quite learned how to apply that yet. It's like once you learn the fact, once you learn math, but you apply it into physics. Like he had not applied it yet into, you know, everything that means. Like, oh, if you are the Son, then yeah, maybe you don't have to pay this tax or whatever. I also like that there is no solid line brought up. Like Jesus is like, this is when you do things that you don't actually have to. You just understand the principle from this. That is a principle that is real and alive and active that sometimes, and it may be up to your discernment sometimes, we may need to bend a little bit to help others, to not be a stumbling block. To others for different reasons. Jesus is saying, you know, I technically don't have to do this, pay this tax. It's like I have 6-year-olds right now that we give chore money to. It'd be like me having them pay me. Like, well, I gave you the money in the first place. Like, they're just paying themselves. We're paying the whole family here. The lessons are, number one, what two lessons here? A reminder of who Jesus was. Again, he's the Son of God. And two, even when you're not legally required to do something, it may still be wise to do so. And this is a lesson to encourage us to discern wisely as best as we can. Why be stubborn here when it only takes a little bit of humility to pay the tax and set a good example? Right. It puts into perspective the seriousness of what a stumbling block is. It could either be, you know, something that makes you kind of stumble as you're walking, but you pick right up into pace, or it could make you trip into the ocean. A stumbling block could be very serious, and in this idea here, if you were putting the stumbling block in front of little children, it's better for you to have that millstone around your neck. Good. So it's a very important thing to remember. Another thing that I loved about this, is it not amazing that Jesus didn't even have this amount of money on him at the time? He had to go and get it through a miracle to get it. When I leave the house without my wallet or my phone, I'm wheeling U-turn. I'm getting back there. I got to get that phone. I'm in a panic. But he is living that idea, that instruction to not even bring an extra tunic when you go out, to trust in God. Now, the lesson is not for everyone today, you know, to stop bringing anything anywhere. That's not going to fly tomorrow when you show up to work or school or whatever it is. But it is a good reminder to put that stuff into perspective, right? Jesus can open up a fish's mouth and pull out all the money that he needs to pay this tax, And in the kingdom that he is the king of, remember, he'll do the same for your spiritual condition. I want to highlight that, spiritual condition. This is not a health and wealth lesson that Jesus is going to pull money out of hats for you to have and use. But if you put your trust in God, I'm saying that your spiritual condition will be taken care of with your faith in him. Any comments on this? Go ahead.
Kind of just getting enough for Peter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Got enough for both of them. I like that. Go ahead, Paul. Mm-hmm. Because he understood the hearts of men, right?
Yes.
Right, and if he noticed that in the timeline, I didn't even have to ask it, and he's still taking care of me. That's another good point. Go ahead. Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, he had to actually do something. It didn't just conjure out of thin air. He could have pulled it out from behind the ear. That would have gone in with the children thing here, a nice little trick there. But instead, he makes him do a little work. He had to put a hook on a line and get it out into the water, and he gets this fish. Good, go ahead. That's interesting. I never thought of that. That's a really good point. Very cool. So they're pretty young, and they needed to be because they needed to be around for a while after. Exactly. My eyes are open now. This is a good fact. All right, good. All right, let's move on to our next section here, 18, 1 through 6. Yeah, I'll go ahead and put that up. Okay, a person from, what we got, K through O. Give a summary of 18, 1 through 6. Yep, go ahead. Okay, yep. And so what did they learn from this? Humility. Excellent. That's the word I was looking for. Notice how we just finished reading about that with Jesus paying the temple tax. And he's saying this is a requirement for this kingdom. They're asking the question, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And his answer is that unless you are humble like a child, you won't even be in it. That puts things into perspective, right? All right. That's what they're learning here. Get rid of that pride that infects you, like when you're using this power that I gave you to heal demons. Remember where your talents come from and use them with humility. Serve children. Be like one yourself in your curiosity and understanding of the kingdom. No prideful obstacles in the way there. And he goes on in the following verses to reveal the importance of little ones and even a single individual in the kingdom. Greatness is not measured by your megachurch following and the thousands of baptisms that you've performed, but your attention to each individual, even a single one. And remember, this is talking about the spirit of little children, all right? Not specifically adolescents, even though it can include them. But you can violate this teaching in the way that you handle an adult with this type of spirit. Do you take advantage of your power over that type of person? Do you exert your influence unduly on somebody with humility? There are meek spirits in this room. Do you see that as a weakness or as a greatness? Right? And what do your actions say? Any thoughts on that before we go to the next one? Good point. Anything? Go ahead, Ms. James. Yeah, again, in reminding them of what this earthly versus spiritual kingdom was, remember, we tried to bring this out, in, I don't know, several classes ago. They expected not just an earthly king, but a big, awesome one. I mean, 6'4", muscular. They weren't looking for just some, you know, piddly person to come in. They really thought it was going to be a big, imposing presence king that's going to come in and crush these nations around them. And take that in contrast with little children. That's the spirit that he's looking for, not that big, imposing presence. You're right. It takes a long time to move our minds in the right direction. Anything else? All right, let's get to the P to T, folks. This is chapter 18, verse 15 to 20. P to T, give me a summary. Good, Michael. All right, good. Yeah, and I like that part of the being loosed in heaven. It's verse 18, how it describes that what they do here on earth is reflected in heaven. That's a really neat thought, right? That the things I'm doing here are already seen and known in heaven. They have an actual effect. All right, and this comes in the direct context of how we deal with our brothers, described here in a process of escalation. So what is the terminology? What does it say happens if your brother listens to you at the end of verse 15? You have what? Gained. You have won a brother. I love that terminology. You have gained a brother. Think about you and your siblings. You can extend this out. Of the value of a sibling, of a brother, something like that. And that for that to be something that you could gain through your actions. Go ahead. Right, it starts individually. Good. I mean, it does escalate from there, but it starts individually. So let me ask, in verse 15, it says, if your brother has sinned against you, go and tell him his fault. How do you do that? Oh, do you want to answer that one, do you? Right. Right. Who are you serving in that interaction? Yourself or the person? Right, your desire is to restore them. You were serving that person, and that's what you're trying to think of. Right. Yeah, there's a process to it, and it may involve the whole church, depending on what you're doing. It may involve you and the individual as you want to start off that way, and that's, I think, what we're hoping to get from this passage off the beginning, that there is that personal responsibility there. But then the remaining verses of this chapter, I'm going to try to wrap this up. We only got 2 minutes left. Sorry, you disease people. We'll get to you in the next class. Hang on to your notes on this. You know, the spirit in which you deal with the people around you is important. Is it a spirit of humility, of service, of love, or of hate and vindictiveness? And that's what he's getting to here. Let's get a summary of this last section real quick. We have 2 minutes left. U to Z, people, what do you got? A summary for 21 to 35, and we'll wrap this section up. Doug, I know you're in there. You got any thoughts? Go ahead. Forgiveness, good. Right. Our kids learned about this in Bible class just recently, and they were shocked that this person would not forgive. How could you do that? And he went to jail. Jail being, like, in their minds, the worst possible thing. You are the baddest of the bad if you're in jail. They were like, could not believe it. But that shock, we should feel that same thing, that God has forgiven us so much. How could we not forgive? So, good summary. Thank you, guys. We'll continue from there in the next class, picking up in chapter 19.